It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. My next guests, Melissa Troutman and Joshua Probanek, are setting off on a summer tour to call attention to hydraulic fracturing, better known as fracking. The journalists co-directed the documentary Triple Divide, which deals with fracking in Pennsylvania. They're taking the film to communities throughout the country that are dealing with their own fracking issues. Before heading out on the road, they're joining us here in Studio A for a conversation about fracking and how they're crossing the country without using any gasoline. Joshua Probanek is the editor-in-chief of Public Herald, a nonprofit organization dedicated to investigative journalism in the public interest, and Melissa Troutman is the managing editor of Public Herald. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh, both of you.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for having us.
Tell us how you plan to travel the country without using gasoline.
Well, we were lucky enough to choose a company like Tesla to partner with Public Herald on this tour, to work with Public Herald because they were interested in our work. We share the same kind of philosophies. Public Herald is a company that works towards more open source journalism. Tesla, as you know, has just released their open source. They've open sourced their patents in this week. So we're going to be using a car that's just powered entirely on a lithium battery that we plug into an electric grid across the country.
And what is your goal? What is the whole idea behind touring with this documentary?
Well, the goal, there's sort of a twofold goal. The first is to share our investigations in states where fracking is being proposed or where it's a major concern. And then the other is to become more sustainable as a nonprofit news organization. We're entirely publicly funded. We did receive a grant for this tour from the Investigative News Network, of which we're a member, and they were funded through the Knight Foundation. So to spread the evidence from our investigations of fracking and talk to more people across the country about their experiences and their concerns, and then also, to make Public Herald more sustainable and grow our audience.
You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. If you have questions about the documentary Triple Divide, for Joshua Probanek and Melissa Troutman, the folks behind the documentary, email is esspgh@wesa.fm, on Twitter at esspgh, hashtag EPLive, and again the number 412-246-2002. There have been a lot of documentaries on the subject of fracking. So one question that comes to mind is, what new ground are you covering? What are we going to learn from the Triple Divide documentary that we haven't heard about in other documentaries and other reports?
So Triple Divide is an investigation. It's answering the question, how are state regulators, how is industry handling the negative impacts from fracking? And in that investigation, we end up interviewing people that have never been interviewed before. We end up looking at cases on fracking that have never been publicized before. For instance, the idea of this pre-drill testing scandal, where the state is allowing companies to dismiss their own science in water contamination cases, essentially changing the background water quality history of an area. That's a shocking fact and something that Triple Divide revealed, something that it broke with its story. Also, the idea of this radioactive waste, which was brought up on the show earlier. Radioactive waste comes in the forms of drill cuttings and solids. Those are being wrapped up in pits and buried in people's backyards into seasonal high water tables. That particular issue was broken Triple Divide, the idea that these are illegally being buried, right? The DEP is saying, no, we don't want you to bury that in the backyard. We're not going to approve the permit for you to bury it. Company's burying it anyway, and then the DEP is coming in and creating a loophole so the company doesn't have to be fined or deal with the violation.
And when you say you've talked to people who've not been interviewed before, who are the people that you've met and spoken with that we'll see in this documentary that we haven't heard from?
Well, one person is Judy Eckert, who is a retired woman in Potter County, Pennsylvania, where much of the film is based. It's also the home of the Triple Continental Divide, which is one of four triple continental divides in North America, which also happens to be in Potter County. And I think we have a clip of Judy, actually.
Okay, let's listen to this clip from the documentary Triple Divide.
Ray, my past husband, worked in the oil field. I knew with what they did in Texas to everybody. But I never thought it would happen in Pennsylvania.
Well, I know our legislators aren't very aware of water and the slow movement of water, because in 6 months, it may only move 2 feet, maybe 50 feet.
I had a friend that came over and got a jug of water, which they had done before, and we never had any problem. Her husband brought it over, and he said, something is wrong with your water.
So she actually has 5 times the maximum amount of arsenic.
My doctor said not to bathe or shower with this water. What am I supposed to do?
Who is protecting the residents of this state if our own state is not willing to do it?
And that is a clip from the documentary Triple Divide, and that woman is talking about her water, the quality of her water being compromised to the point where she is afraid to use it. The question, though, becomes, and this came up in our previous segment, is how do we know, especially when the Pennsylvania Department of Health, for example, says there is no connection, or at least they haven't found a concrete connection between fracking and groundwater being compromised. So how do we know that the problems that this woman is having are caused by fracking?
Well, it's a pretty simple answer, to be honest. We have a pre-drill test and we have a post-drill test. In that pre-drill test, that gives us a baseline data for that water quality. So we know things like arsenic weren't there. We know things like methane weren't there. We know that radium wasn't there, right? Radon. Then they drill.
These were tested
before drilling. Mm-hmm. And then they're tested after drilling. And now all of a sudden we are above the maximum contaminant level for human consumption for all of these chemicals, right? Except for something like methane, which isn't considered hazardous, but certainly is considered explosive. And in some cases, methane has been tested at 0 milligrams per liter in the water supply. After they frack, we're talking about methane at 84 milligrams per liter. That's 4 times the explosive level for your home.
And who's doing these before and after tests?
It either is the company or it is the DEP in an investigation or is an independent water tester that's hired by the homeowner to try and get more than one water test, because essentially they don't trust the state and they don't trust the industry, so they do hire other people.
So, Melissa, are we hearing about this from the DEP?
No, we're not hearing about this from the DEP.
So they've tested, according to your research and your reporting, the DEP has tested the water before and after fracking. Found that it is the quality of it is worse after fracking, and they're not telling anybody about this?
The DEP determined in Judy's case that oil and gas was not the cause of her water contamination.
What did they say was the cause?
They gave her several speculative answers, but they didn't give her a definitive cause. Mm-hmm. Even though DEP decided that oil and gas drilling 400 feet from her water well was not the cause, the company did replace her water supply, even though they weren't technically on paper at fault.
And that was part of a loophole in the law, right? This decision was based on politics, not based on science. The law says that if you make your complaint outside of 6 months, now it's if you make your complaint outside of a year, the state does not have to hold the industry accountable and does not have to make them supply you water, right? So in their determination, they don't have to say the industry caused it. If she would have made that complaint 6 months earlier, the state would have been more obligated to say that the industry caused this problem and have the industry bring that water there.
Are there reports of people making that complaint earlier than the six-month window?
Absolutely. And in those situations, the state has been lying to the homeowner and saying that Section 3218 of this law does not apply to them. And they're telling them that the state does not have to make the industry bring them water, even though under this law it says that they have to.
We are talking about the documentary Triple Divide with the two journalists behind it, Joshua Probanek and Melissa Troutman, here on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. To join the conversation, 412-246-2002, the number to call. Let's go to Lois in Scenery Hill. Lois, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
Hi. I wish you would have done your documentary in Washington County. I judge this by my children's ages, and my 7-year-old, approximately 6 years ago, my father called me. They live on the Monongahela River, and he said, you know, Lois, I see trucks line up here every day, every 15 minutes, and dump stuff into the river. And I went down and witnessed it, called the commissioners, called the DEP, and they hung up a sign that said, unless you have a permit, you can't do this. I witnessed the trucks taking water out of our fire hydrants. I actually called about that, and they said, well, your township has a deal with them to be allowed to take the water out of the hydrants. I've seen them dump it into creeks. I have friends that work in the gas wells, and they talk about what they do with the holding water. They suck out as much as they can, fill it with fill, float up the tarp and bury it. They take water out of creeks. The Monongahela River is polluted again. We get, you know, notices. We got six of them last year that our water's at a dangerous level.
Lois, let me jump in. Do you know for a fact, and I'm not doubting you, but how do you know that these were, in fact, the fracking companies that were dumping the water into the river?
They're all the residual waste companies, and I walked up and directly asked them.
And what did they tell you?
They tell you that they are working for what they do. A lot of the companies is they pass the buck. So, in other words, say, you know, one of the drilling companies, they hire a company to come and take their fracking water away. So once that's done, they can wash their hands of it and say, well, we gave it to this company instead. So that's what happens a lot. Years and years ago, when we were first approached, I've talked to people of Range. I've talked to people of Chesapeake. I've talked to people of Rice Energy. One of a very young boy that worked for one of the companies, I won't say which because he still works there, flat out told me, do not do this. You have three children. This is terrible for the environment. And said, if you're going to do it, you have to have it so that they cannot frack on your property.
Joshua, you're nodding. You seem to be showing some recognition. Is this a fairly common tale?
It's a hard story to listen to. It is a really common tale, right? So the idea of illegal dumping. The Isaac Walton League did a tremendous job bringing this issue to light down here in southwestern PA, where companies were illegally dumping into creeks and rivers. And it's been well reported. In 2011, when we were working on the film, we had a whistleblower at DEP that was working with us to show us that there was illegal dumping inside of a mining shaft, an abandoned mining shaft. Unfortunately, that whistleblower is so concentrated at DEP's office, if we had released this particular report, they would have been fired. So we had to scrap it from the film, and we're still holding on to it, trying to figure out how we can publish this report without ruining that person's job.
Lois, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Margaret in Lawrence County. Margaret, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hi, Margaret. Margaret, hi. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. I can hear you very well. Can you hear me?
I can indeed. Go ahead with your comment or a question for our guests.
Well, I just think that it's absolutely incredulous that the government, DEP, Corbett's office, whomever, is denying that there are legitimate health impacts from fracking to the people that are forced to live in the area of this. I mean, it's just ridiculous that the oil and gas industry can come into an area that is zoned residential, zoned agricultural, set up this toxic, extractive process next to people's homes, water wells, schools, daycare centers, throw all this crap into, stuff into the environment, and the toxic chemicals, the endocrine disruptors, the known carcinogens, the neurotoxins, I mean, you name it, and then say, oh, there's never been a recorded incident. Well, that's like, you know, go to the list of the harmed and look at the number of people there that have registered, that have raised their hand and said, I've been harmed by this industry.
Well, Margaret, I thank you for sharing that story. One of the things that has come up is that we are seeing or not seeing documentation of a lot of the health concerns that people have. Well, we just talked in our previous segment about how certain retirees from the Pennsylvania Department of Health are some of the allegations that they're saying have occurred within the department, and how some employees have allegedly been silenced when it comes to what possible links between health concerns and fracking. What have you two learned about what medical professionals are saying, and for concerned citizens, where is the hard evidence that shows that there might be links between some of the rashes, some of the nosebleeds, and those types of incidents, and their relation to fracking occurring in one community or another?
Well, it's unfortunate that we do lack a lot of hard data, some whole reports of and collections of whole data. However, we do have a lot of documented cases of health impacts that weren't there before drilling. The Southwest Environmental Health Project is one place that is probably the one of the few places that is actively collecting this data. Triple Divide, we have cases in Triple Divide where people are having health impacts. Josh and I will also be publishing several reports while we're on the road between now and the election of very, very disturbing health stories related to drilling.
What kind of feedback have you gotten about the documentary from those who have seen it?
People are shocked, they're astounded, and they're mad. And they most often want to do something.
They often thank us for not putting our opinions into the film and thank us for just sticking to the facts. This is one of the few films where you're going to actually see the industry talking to you on camera, where you're going to have an interview with Chesapeake Energy, where you're going to have an interview with the Marcellus Shale Coalition. You know, you're going to see all sides of the issue. It's just overwhelmingly against the industry right now when it comes to these cases. So we're not going to editorialize a story and create an improper balance. We're just going to give it to you the way that it was.
What criticism have you received about the documentary? I understand there's been some.
There's been some. I think, there's been a lot of surprises and lack of criticism, actually. We haven't heard from the industry. Energy In Depth has been to our screenings, recorded conversations, and not commented. Scott Perry, who's head of oil and gas at DEP, told me himself that the film is very well done. So that is coming from DEP. We did get some criticism from the anti-fracking community. Because
from the anti-fracking community?
Yes. Particularly up in upstate New York when we toured there, because they didn't feel that the film they didn't feel the film was strong enough against the – they were lamenting the fact that we didn't take a position and have our opinions in it, which is not our role. Our role is not to be for or against, of course, as journalists. Our role is to inform the public and tell the truth.
Are you finding that communities are just waking up to the issues surrounding fracking, that this has sparked some discussion in areas where people might have not wanted to deal with it, might have had some avoidance issues?
Absolutely. Avoidance issues that were profound in 2011 and 2012. Collecting sources then was tremendously difficult in northeastern PA because people thought that there wasn't going to be a problem, that everything was okay. And then in 2013, as their problems started to come in with royalty payments and other issues, all of a sudden we get phone calls to come up there and work with communities who otherwise had nothing to say before. We just released a report where the state created a permit to allow companies to store waste in people's backyards for up to six years. It's called a WMGR 123. 15 community members in northeastern PA, in a town that's never caused any problems with fracking, have decided to appeal this permit. DEP asked their attorney, what can we make this, you know, what can we do to make this go away? And the attorney said, well, you can remove the permit. And DEP said, we're not going to do that. So right now it's going to go up in front of the EQB hearing board.
I understand that you were labeled eco-terrorists by industry executives and law enforcement officials. What can you tell us about this?
Sure. It was actually just industry executives. So during production of the film, we were taking night shots in Tioga State Forest from the roadways, and we had permission from the guard shack at the site that we were photographing beforehand. We like to check in and just make sure people know we're there, especially when working on public lands at night. Two water truck drivers blocked in our vehicle, told us that we were to stay there until the company guy came down. And then
the company guy
said they were working for Seneca Resources, but they didn't name names.
So this was a representative, somebody higher up in with a position in management in that company,
third party contractor most likely.
So they didn't call the cops, they called an executive from the company. And what happened then?
Well, I started I photographed one of the truckers' license plates because he was taking down our license plate information, and that upset him, and he came after me, wrapped his arms around me, threw me up against the car, and tried to get my camera. And at that point, Josh pulled him off. He stepped back, looked a little confused, and then immediately changed his mind and told us to leave, which we promptly did. We later, the next day, we filed a report with the Bureau of Forestry, and the chief investigating officer for our case called me and said that in conversations with state officials and the industry, he's a law enforcement officer. Foresters have the same authority as state police on public land and state forests. The chief investigating officer told me that we, Josh and I, were referred to as potential eco-terrorists in conversations with state officials. When we tried to contact DCNR to get more details, we learned that DCNR staff was instructed not to talk to us, and we also heard that since we also heard
did they say why they felt you were eco-terrorists? Based on what?
I had a brief conversation with one of the executives at Seneca Resources, and in our email exchange, he tried to make it seem like we were sneaking around at night taking pictures on state land, mm-hmm. but we weren't sneaking. We had identified ourselves, we had gotten permission, and we did get confirmation from DCNR that we were perfectly within our right to photograph anyone on public land at any time.
And we did tell the industry that we were investigative journalists working there, so they knew at that time. Mm-hmm.
Before we wrap this up, tell us about your new open source project.
Sure.
Go ahead, file room. Yeah, this is exciting. So the problems we've had with DEP is getting access to information, right? Data collection. The idea of we can't find out if there's health problems because we really can't look at the data. It takes us months to get through some files because we can only schedule a file review once a month and we get one day to look at files. So what we've done is we've been collecting files for 3 years and we created publicfiles.org. Publicfiles.org is a transparent online file room, entirely open sourced, working with networks across this state and other states to put all of those files into one place online so that everybody can see this. And this is really important because the DEP says, well, we have information online. And that's right, that you can look at the violations on DEP's website. What you can't look at is the pictures. You can't look at the notes. You can't look at why they made a decision not to give a violation. And you also can't look at the complaint reports. The complaint reports are very revealing. In Bradford County, you have 285 water supply complaints. My question now as a journalist is there water contamination? My question is, how much water contamination are you going to allow in your township before you decide to do something about it, based on what we've been able to see in these complaint reports?
Joshua Probanek is the editor-in-chief of Public Herald, a nonprofit organization dedicated to investigative journalism in the public interest. And Melissa Troutman is the managing editor of Public Herald. Their documentary, Triple Divide, deals with fracking in Pennsylvania. Thanks to both of you for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
It was great. Thanks, Paul.
And coming up, we'll talk with Allegheny Front reporter Reed Frazier about a series that is beginning tomorrow on water contamination caused by fracking. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.